Okay.
So how are they doing?
Yes, how did it go?
So,
that's okay.
I have a number of sermons that have been published.
Conference committee will reconvene and come back to order. Thank you, members of the public, for your patience. It's been a long day so far with multiple procedures on the House and Senate floors. In the time that we've been away, we've had multiple conversations among stakeholders, as well as House and Senate members. The House made an offer to the Senate, and I believe that should be on the table. The Senate, I believe, has some offer to present to the House. Is that correct? A counteroffer? Mm-hmm. So looking forward to it.
Do you, Representative Kalin, do you want to talk about your offer first, or do you want me to just start?
I think our offer, just very broadly, I think represents a lot of the progress that we made over the last couple of days and a lot of the input. I think we see we were going into the conference committee, I think that some members were inclined, specifically Representative McNamara and I, to go up to the Office of Energy Security's high number on public building renovations, thinking it could be the fastest job creator and energy savings. And I think that we've heard very compelling testimony on commercial industrial being a place to really make a stronger commitment, as well as recognizing that the residential energy efficiency component outside of weatherization has merit, but that the CNI opportunity may be greater than the general residential efficiency. I think, obviously, we heard great compelling testimony on the Minnesota Power Project in the large city by the lake, and have since discovered there may be another smaller community where we could really do some good demonstration of that same experience. I think the backside really just represents kind of outstanding issues, a general recognition we want to do something on renewables, but that we still have not yet had a chance to put a stake in the ground. And I think that's generally where we're at. Oh, I see. Senator Anderson, I see actually one typo that Mr. Pomeroy and I did not catch, and that was that the National Energy Efficiency Center rather than Central, but apologize for that typo. But so I don't know if that maybe had been the whole thing up in understanding.
Well, that makes all the difference. So. I think we got to redo our offer.
We'll recess till 10:40. No, excuse me. Sorry for the heart attack. So, Senator Anderson.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, we have an offer I'd like to have passed out, please. Mr. Chair, yeah. Yep. There are two pages, so we should have stapled these together, but it's sort of just, I already have it. I don't need one. But if you want.
Thank you.
One is numbers and one is sort of more language oriented.
Center was correct.
We didn't put it in our offer, so we didn't have it. It's not in our offer. Oh, that's the other one. Yeah. That we spelled.
A two down. A good book. I made 70. Thanks.
Oh, is that the paperwork? You don't have to.
Yes, yeah, somewhere else I put down. They're all grabbing.
Yeah, they are.
So I'm going to give the public about 30 more seconds here to finish the blizzard. And then we'll ask Senator Anderson to walk quickly, please, through the Senate offer one.
We had 10. Okay, I'll just give everyone a chance, Mr. Chair, to sit down, and then we can.
Well, Senator Anderson, I think things have quieted down. I think you can start walking through, if you could.
Sure. All right, let's go through the numbers first. We have a fiscal page and a language page. So that's the weatherization number and the community block grant number are identical to what we've got already. Under public building renovations, we have that as a combined program for schools, local governments, and state governments, and that adds flexibility. And in our number here, we've moved up from our original number, and we are splitting the difference with the House offer.
Okay.
On that, on residential energy efficiency, we cut that significantly from our original position.
Okay.
We were at $15 million, and we reduced it to $11 million. Out of that, we take 1.6 for the Minnesota Power for two pilots, one in a large city, one in a small city. Commercial industrial number, we went up from the Senate position, but it's actually splitting the difference with the new House position, the House number. So it's 8.5, halfway between where we started and where you are. The CERTS is in here at the same level. The Advanced Energy Efficiency Center, which is the technology transfer for energy efficiency, that's at the number they actually had requested. And in the Senate bill, we were at $822,000, but we had some other projects combined that I think now are removed from the bill, hopefully. Emerging renewable energy grants, that's $2 million that's been agreed to. On renewables, you know, we talked a lot about renewables. Our Senate position in our bill is under 10% of the total bill, renewable energy. Now, if you look at the whole bill, it's $200 million. And so we were reluctant to cut below 10% of the whole bill for renewables, but we cut it a little bit. But I'm telling you, this is a hard decision, and we're not going to go any lower. So we kept the solar amount at 7, and the schools and local government renewables we cut from $10 million down to $8 million. And out of our renewables, we kept the $250,000 for the small grants, and then the $100,000 for the small green renewable energy business center. So that comes out of the local renewable program. So that's the money we're proposing. If you look at the language, just a few things we mention. We agree with the House on 200% of poverty, that the higher income eligibility level should be adopted for weatherization, and on combined House and Senate language on the block grants and weatherization. Public buildings, one of the things we're proposing in the current law under PB, the state PB program, to any member of the public listening, the
lease purchase finance mechanism
financing program for public buildings for energy efficiency statute allows it to be used for renewables, and we suggest that Commerce could carve out a small amount of that to be open for renewables for state buildings, and that was part of our reduction of renewables to allow some of this to be used for that, which is already authorized by law. For residential efficiency, we want to combine the language, and we suggest that we should describe these pilot projects as from Minnesota Power service territory and one large city, one small city. Commercial industrial, we prefer the Senate language, although I think, yeah, we prefer the Senate language. Same with the emerging renewable energy. As far we have the 5% administrative cap, but we proposed for training dollars, they should fall under the administrative cap on the SEP side, but not under weatherization. There doesn't need to be under the administrative cap because there's a large authorization for training. And then we like the Senate language for accountability and reporting. That's it. Any other, I don't know if, Mr. Chair, I don't know if my members have any other comments, things they'd like to add about this.
Seeing nothing but brow scratching. any questions on any part of the Senate offer from House members for more clarification or information? I guess an observation that I think there's some great areas of commonality, some I think there's still some areas to that we'll need to reconcile. So I guess I look to any of my House members again for any clarifying questions or thoughts you'd like to share. Otherwise, I think that probably the best, and this isn't a, I'll give our House members a chance to continue to digest a little bit. Representative Brainard, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if it would be helpful where the Senate language is preferred, if we could have some brief discussion of what those issues are, if you could identify what it is that's in your language.
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
That'd be fine. Get my side by side.
So,
The first one that we mentioned was, I think for the most part, we can find sort of a middle ground on most of the language, and we've talked about some of that. On the commercial industrial in particular, the Senate language is preferable, and I think we heard testimony from some people that, oh, this is from Senator Dill. Is this your thing? Do you want to talk about this for one second?
Senator Anderson, I have the gavel. And my plan is to get done tonight. And so I'm going to be pushing us along and keeping us on topic here. So if you could look at R6 on the residential efficiency.
That's fine, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to do that. This isn't residential. It's the commercial industrial language.
Well,
which is on what page? I'm trying to find it. R11. Mr. Chair, I'd like members to look at R11. The Senate language. I think there's one issue in this language about on the second page on R12, lines 812 to 815, that have been identified as problematic for the utilities, and I think we should delete that. But other than that, I think our language really will work well, and I heard a lot of support for it, that it's clearly intended to achieve the energy efficiency improvements in business and commercial facilities that we heard a lot of testimony about. It allows nonprofits, but along with businesses. And we also... And it's modeled after our really successful program that we've used in St. Paul. So I think it's describes the program that we've heard a lot of testimony about pretty accurately. So.
Mr. Chair.
I don't know if that helps, Representative Brainard. But.
Representative Brainard, does that answer your question on that element?
Yes.
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, I thought in the discussion that we had earlier today there was some agreement that the lines beginning on 7.32 would be altered to make it less specifically dedicated.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Anderson,
Representative Hilty, if the House is willing to accept our language in general, yes, we can make that change.
Well, Senator Anderson,
I don't have any problem with that.
Senator Anderson, I think the question I have is, of the $8.5 million for commercial industrial, how much do you propose be allocated for the XL service territory project administered by the Port Authority.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think I've answered this a couple times, because I've been asked this a couple times, and the answer is I'm letting that be up to Commerce to make their own recommendation. We've heard over and over they need flexibility, and so I don't think we need to carve out a certain amount. I think there's a lot of recognition that it's a good model. I know Commerce said they think it is one of the best ways they have on their list to achieve immediate energy savings. You know, the projects are ready to go. It'll be a big job creator. The demand is out there. They have a list of businesses that already can't get the improvements made because they don't have the money on hand. They don't have capital. So I would just leave that up to Commerce to figure that out.
Okay. Representative Saylor.
Mr. Chair, and I just needed some clarification because I misunderstood and maybe missed something. But I thought on R12, where you said 8.12, 8.15, I thought that 1.2, 1.3, 1.4 were okay, and it was the 1.5 that they wanted to take out.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, it says a utility participating through its conservation improvement program is entitled to claim the energy savings attributable to its participating investment. That language was the limiting problem that we needed to take out.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Saylor.
Right?
Was that
Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Was
It's just attributable to its participating investment? I see. Mr. Chair, I see lots of heads nodding.
Thank you.
I didn't quite get that.
I understand that. Again, side conversations can actually slow us down rather than speed us up, so I'd like to keep some order here and get us clicking through quickly. Representative Hilty, did you have another question?
Well, Mr. Chair, back to the commercial industrial. I realize that this did not come from Senator Anderson, but I believe a number that we have heard with respect to the Port Authority project was $5 million. Senator Anderson, if that turned out to be the amount, it wouldn't leave very much for anything else.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty.
Senator Anderson.
Who did you hear that number from? From the Port Authority? Not from me. So from Commerce?
Well, Senator Anderson, Mr. DeFebri testified earlier today about the $5 million figure. And to be honest, I had been prepared to make a to ask my members to come along with me in increasing our thought from 2.5 to 3.5, and I'm convinced that 5 is probably the right amount, but I share Representative Hilty's concern. And I guess I'll be even more forthright that, you know, we have about $60 million of discretionary funds in the bill, and I see not only roughly $20 million for renewables, but then a carve-out within PB as well for renewables. And, you know, I think where we heard very clearly that there's a strong opportunity in commercial industrial to really help businesses. And so I want to see that I think we're going to have to, unless House members have more clarifying questions, perhaps we might want to finish going through the language preference, and then we'll take a recess and hopefully have a chance to connect some more. Senator Anderson, excuse me.
Mr. Chair, I'm not quite tracking the conversation here, so I just want to be clear I understand what you guys are concerned about. So you raised the amount for commercial industrial to $10 million, and so you were anticipating $5 million of that to go to the XL project?
That's correct.
Is your concern that my number isn't high enough, or is it about the language? I wasn't quite tracking how you just want the number to be higher?
Well,
Representative Hilton.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, yes, as I said, we were making the assumption that it could easily come to $5 million for that project, which doesn't leave very much for anything else that might come along. And we, as Representative Kalin pointed out, we have been made aware that there are a lot of opportunities in this area. that have pretty much been defined already, and in terms of economic stimulus, job creation, and retention, would probably be very effective. So that really is how we arrived at that figure, because we were afraid that this one project would suck up quite a bit of the funds.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, that's we're talking about about half the state and the majority of the state's population and manufacturing capacity. So yeah. It's not like it would be a bad use of $5
million. Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson really did not dispute that, but you know, most of us actually live in the other part of the state, and we'd like to see some opportunity that went beyond perhaps XL service territory.
And Mr.
Senator
Chair,
Anderson.
Representative Hilty, I absolutely agree with you, and I think that's what our position has always been as well. But I guess what I'm let me further ask, if I may, that is your $10 million offer on that, proposing that $5 million would go to that the other $5 million would go to only to outside XL service territory or only to things described in the House language? Or do you have any clarity about what the rest of it would just be available for? But would it be statewide or?
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, I'm not speaking for the for our representation on the committee, but it certainly was my idea. I mean, I don't think that any of us in the on the House side disputed the value of the Port Authority of the XL project, but we felt that there were a lot of other opportunities, and we wanted to make sure that since they are likely to be ones that are developed more rapidly and involve a variety of resources, that this would be a good area of focus.
Thank you.
Senator Anderson, can you speak to the residential efficiency language on R6, please? My recollection from our conversation last evening is that we were except for you called a stakeholder meeting, so that's fine. Well, Senator Anderson, I think that there have been discussions about flexibility in language, and I think we have heard quite a bit that, and I think you know, it's been leading us towards the House side. So I'm wondering if you could talk about this change about why the Senate language would be preferable. Unless there's a clarification here,
Mr. Chair, what is your question
on R6? Just if you could talk about, I see you have a Senate language with House addition. What does that mean?
Mr. Chair, I think our policy is just to put language out in public before we have an official agreement. So that's I think we have some drafting going on, and we can present that pretty soon. And
well, Senator,
I don't think anything has changed.
Well, Senator Anderson, I just see Senate language with House addition. Was that what's on the offer? I just want to know what that means.
On
residential efficiency, Senate language with House addition.
Well, it really was just a vague statement, meaning that we're combining different parts of the language. And I think, as you know, Representative Kaelin, there's some language being drafted by counsel that I think you and I have both seen, and that's what I'm talking about. And it's a combination of House and Senate language. So
okay,
that's all I meant. And if that's not clear,
Okay, it's not, and I'm comfortable with that. I just want to know kind of what we're responding to on the offer, because...
Yeah, I just didn't think we had anything to propose publicly in language in that yet, so I didn't want to specify what it was, because we like to sort of be transparent about things like that.
Well, I can only respond to what's on paper. I think the emerging renewable energy industries piece, I think it's a Senate provision, and so we'll look at the Senate language and I think try to see what we can do in terms of tightening up the pieces. Accountability and reporting, talking about the Senate language, I think it's late in the side-by-side, R25. If you maybe just speak to...
Well, Mr. Chair...
Senator Anderson.
My glasses here. I think the Senate language was just a little bit more detailed in terms of the information we would like to see coming back. let's see. For weatherization, I don't see this in the House. We wanted to know, you know, the number of units weatherized, the number of rental units, energy usage, income data, where the money was coming from. Just, you know, some details about the success of the weatherization money, where it's going, and what the results are. That was 1818 to 1820. 1821 to 1823, we wanted to know what the outcomes were for the number of jobs created or retained, and I think you had that same language. But we also wanted to see how successful we were in reaching out to disadvantaged communities to offer those employment opportunities and make, you know, and to get what the rates of employment were. And let's see. I think we have the same energy saving. Those might be the main differences. We also, yep, I think those are the main differences. There's not a lot different. Okay. They're quite similar.
Thank you. Any other questions from the House, Representative McNamara?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if would it be timely to have a discussion about a couple of the items that maybe we, before we break up again, I noticed the Senate, I was surprised. Senator Anderson, you still stuck with your the certs, the $1 million. I thought the testimony was pretty strong that maybe we should just allow the agency to look at the possibility of using some canvassers or door-to-door or different ways to reach out to the community. I'm not sure that it rose to the level of cost-effectiveness, so I was surprised that that was still included. I guess that would be one thing I would ask.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think the Senate has felt really strongly that outreach needs to happen above and beyond what we normally do. And we ask the public, I made a call early on in the session for proposals to do outreach, and this is the one that came forward. And we spent a lot of time talking about it, and we are certainly open to, you know, if you think there's ways we should modify the approach, I think that's a great discussion to have. But I think the concept is that we need an aggressive outreach plan of some kind to reach people who aren't ordinarily served by these programs so that we can maximize the number of Minnesotans who actually get their homes weatherized or who find out about these opportunities for funding. And that's what we're talking about. So I'm not really clear. I mean, and just about all the money is going into paying people to work. I mean, jobs. Almost all the money is for salary. And so it's all about jobs. So I'm not sure that I'm clear on what the House objections are specifically.
If I could for a second. Senator Anderson, where's the money going in the CERTS plan? You said all of it's going to jobs. Are you referring to canvassers or?
Mr. Chair, I think we had some pretty detailed testimony about their plan to hire how many? 473 people part-time.
Representative McNamara.
And that's where most of the money would go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Anderson, what I would say is I would rather see the $1 million used for energy assistance and for energy conservation as opposed to paying people to go door to door. If we're interested in having some volunteers from some interest groups that have expressed interest or some college students or people that maybe interning on some of the programs, some of the folks that have been here to visit during committee, I think that would be good. But I'd rather see us use that $1 million to give the people, for instance, that hire a job to weatherize houses or install windows and do stuff like that than my calculation, and Mr. Pomeroy confirmed it. It was about $50 for each successful potential house that we would get to say they wanted to look at it. I think we'd be better to spend the money, and I just think that's one. I personally don't think that's money well spent and doesn't, to me, meet what the program was intended for. And I just thought, Mr. Chair, before we broke, I wanted to say I think that's really important, that one issue to me.
Senator Rummel.
Mr. Chair, I pulled out the handout from the CERTS program, and for the $1 million investment, we achieve a savings of $2.5 million on top of the 473 jobs. So it seems to me that the investment pays off.
Well, Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rummel, I don't know what energy savings we're going to get out of paying somebody to go door to door. If we don't spend that $1 million, people going door to door, we can spend that $1 million to weatherize homes or put the money on the ground. I mean, are they assuming that we're going to waste the money instead of using it for weatherization? This is overhead to me. This is not put money on the ground. This would be another $1 million of overhead.
Senator Rummel.
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, there are many, many, many low-income people who could use this weatherization that will not have access to it easily if somebody doesn't come and personally invite them to participate. And the savings to their homes and to their bottom line is, I think, it's not a big part of the bill, but it does access or it does reach a part of the population that is constantly left out of the mix. And I do think it's worth the extra effort and a little overhead to bring the part of the population that's always left out into the system.
And Mr. Chair.
Senator Rummel, I do want to just make a quick comment about this, that I think that the debate is about the tool to do that rather than the goal. And I've actually had some really good and fairly impassioned conversations with some of the higher leadership about which tools serve that purpose. And that's why I've been very pointed about asking the sort of outcome-based piece of it. I do just wonder, I mean, I've heard consistently from the department and from the community action agencies that actually, one of the things that Chair Hilty asked from the very beginning is, do we know that there are these homes to weatherize? And the answer that I got, that we've gotten back repeatedly, is we have more homes to weatherize than we will ever be able to do with these stimulus funds, the LIHEAP eligible folks. And so that's why my question has been about, could we spend the $1 million to help businesses retain jobs under the commercial industrial portion, or help schools save money on the bottom line by doing the renovations. And so I just want to make sure that I think all 11 elected senators and representatives at the table here share that goal. The question is how to get there. Senator Kubley.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, you know, I guess I'd be interested in visiting with the CAP agencies about, well, the locations of the homes that they're talking about. I guess I would guess that there's going to be a significant number of communities that are absent from their list. And should we make an attempt to make this a statewide program that's honestly statewide, or are we going to omit significant portions of the rural areas?
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Kubley, you bring up a question that I had raised in discussions with the CERS representatives earlier. I don't believe there was any plan in what they were proposing to in rural areas to go beyond municipalities. I don't think, I mean, I'm pretty sure in my area that a great number of the LIHEAP eligibles do not live within city limits of any of the towns in my district. But I think that actually what we're talking about, I think it's just the opposite of what you're describing, that if we're limited in the way that this has been proposed, I don't see that many of the most eligible or needy families would be included in a survey. And moreover, we have had conversations with Mr. Kuhn and Ms. Pollich and Mr. Haskard, and I think that they have kind of been rethinking some of what was initially proposed, and as far as I can tell, the Senate is still making a commitment to what was initially proposed, which is a survey, which I think we have pretty consistently felt in the House position that's highly questionable in terms of its ability to be conducted satisfactorily. Did make some proposals to the CERS people to change that concept somewhat. We've had some response in terms of maybe limiting this to some defined more or less pilot projects rather than to try to do something statewide in the way it was initially envisioned. I think we would be more receptive to that than something that we have not heard a lot of satisfactory answers about how this could actually be accomplished. And to Senator Rummel's points, I don't know how in a door-to-door canvas it's actually possible to determine income eligibility. I think that to think that you can do that without just getting most of the doors that are open slammed in your face is kind of optimistic, which is why we had suggested maybe a slightly different approach than what was originally envisioned.
Well,
Senator Kubley, then.
I don't know, Mr. Chair. It just seems to me that, you know, I guess I thought this was going to be a statewide program. I understand what you're saying, Bill, or Representative Hilty, but, it seems to me that under this plan, the people that usually get left out will be left out one more time. You know, I guess I'd liken it to people who live in your district that, you know, they won't write to you, they won't call you up, but if you show up where they live, they'll talk to you. So I don't know. I mean, I think we ought to make some effort to contact people that live in towns of 100 people or more or less, I mean, and you know, even some effort to look at contacting some rural residences. I don't know. I guess I was hoping that there would be some kind of a plan to cover the parts of the state that have, you know, high concentrations of people who have low household incomes. And we know that on a county-by-county basis at the very minimum.
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kubley, I sort of agree with what you said. I think if I showed up at their door and said, there are a number of things that have become available that you might be interested in, could I give you this information, and if you have any question about any of them, I'd be happy to answer them. They might talk to me. But if I show up at their door and say, could you tell me what your household income is and how old is your refrigerator and does your furnace work right, I don't think they would talk to me. I would suggest you try that a couple of times before you make that assumption.
Yeah, yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Hilty, I would certainly agree with that. I guess I thought that's part of what the training component was about. Well, so that's not it.
Mr. Chair, somebody could train me well enough that I could get answers to those questions. I'd be receptive to that.
Well, I don't. Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Hilty, I'm not assuming that they're going to tell you that at the door. But, you know, you can tell them where to go, where there are people who.
Senator Cooley, have you been door knocking with
poor, me? Poor choice of words, Mr. Chair. Well, I think you get what I'm saying, Ms. Sharon, Representative Hilty. I guess, you know, my concern is just that we make an effort to reach some folks who are going to be fairly obviously eligible to take part in what we're offering.
Senator Anderson, thank you for your patience.
No problem. This has been a very good dialogue, I think, and you know, I'm getting a little bit of mixed messages from the House about this. I'm getting some outright hostility to the idea of outreach and some embracing of the idea of outreach, and I'm not clear where you're really at, because if you're open to the idea of outreach, I think you're asking very, very good questions, and we should think about how to shape a program that meets what you're looking for, too. That's the compromise process. Let's negotiate. Let's talk. Let's consider options. And I've been asking people to come up with some other ideas to deal on to some of the issues that have been raised. And I'm sure a lot of you have seen some alternatives floated around. So, I mean, if we're open to talking about this, let's get to work on it and identify what we really need outreach for and what we want to accomplish. And I think Senator Kubley has raised a really important point, and maybe that should be somewhat a more defined focus. How do we go to those really small communities that are just left behind? I mean, we talked about, you know, communities in your district that have never gotten a government grant for anything in history, you know, and there's a lot of them. And there's a lot of people there that have been left behind, and that's what outreach is all about, is reaching out to people who might be left behind. And I guess the question is, if the House is open to that discussion, let's sort of try to refine what we think we could accomplish with it and what goals, and start there, and we can reshape this. I don't think we're opposed to reshaping this. We just want to hear that you're open to even the concept of outreach, and I guess I haven't heard the House's clearly that message from the House. So I hope that you are.
Representative McNamara.
I think, Senator, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Anderson, I think we're making a lot of headway here. Senator Kubley, Representative Hilty, I think, have had a good discussion. And what I think our point is, we don't believe it's cost-effective to pay people to go door-to-door. And I truthfully believe some of the dialogue presented here just now is actually probably can reconfirm that. But things like folks throughout Minnesota, very small communities have parades, almost all of them do. what a great opportunity to have some of this information available and at the booths and such. Maybe there should be some money in here for literature potential, and maybe we have some pilot projects where we get maybe some volunteer groups. Maybe it's part of the young folks working in energy, part of their intern, where they get some hours and miles on the ground, and maybe we reimburse them for some out-of-pocket expenses, but we don't pay them for going door-to-door. You know, a smaller amount, I think, in here could go a lot longer and reach some results. I think our apprehension was the paying people to go door-to-door that we didn't think was cost-effective.
Representative McNamara, I think that's you and I have had specific conversations to this point. I think that may be an effective place to start for the conversation. I hesitate this late hour to ask for more testimony, but I would like to ask Mr. Anderson from the Community Action Agencies, from the CAPS, to come forward for a moment. I know you were out of the room working on a different issue that we'd asked you to work on, but the discussion, I don't know if you caught Senator Kubley's concern about, you know, sort of those who are eligible. We know that there's something like 400,000 income eligible households for LIHEAP by income, and we serve about less than half, certainly, but a small portion of those. In terms of the weatherization, if you could very succinctly and as concisely as you can, maybe describe, you know, are we reaching rural areas? Are we reaching, are the community action agencies doing what they can to get out, or can you use some help? Do we need to do some more to make sure that the towns smaller than 100, the rural folks that won't answer our doors when we're out door knocking, even if we're, you know, we were the only politicians that ever been there for 30 years. And Senator Kubley,
well, Mr. Chair, I assume you haven't door knocked in too many towns that size. Oh. A lot of people come to the door in small towns because they're happy to see anybody.
Senator Kubley, my experience, I only have a couple of really, really small towns, but my experience is a twofold. One is if you're of a decent enough density that they've seen the 17 candidates on at every single level of office because they're the only places where it's time-effective, cost-effective, as it were, to door knock. So they see everybody. In the rural areas, it's really exciting, although you always wonder, I've yet to look down the barrel of a gun door knocking, so I kind of consider that a badge of honor if it ever happens. But, you know, sometimes the response is they do come to the door, but often in different layers of dress and different layers of or different levels of welcoming. So, Mr. Anderson, if you could, to the original question, I guess.
Mr. Chair and members, community action agencies run a wide variety of programs that require outreach, not only weatherization. And in all cases, not only this year, but over the course of a number of years, the challenge is always to try to strike a reasonable balance between reaching eligible households or individuals and creating unrealistic expectations, because no matter what the program, resources are always finite and usually they're far too limited. So community action agencies employ a wide variety of outreach strategies depending upon the contemporary circumstances of that year. Where possible, we try to cross-pollinate, and as is the case with using weatherization as a gateway for weatherization referrals. Or we may use Head Start as a gateway for referrals or senior programming. And again, oftentimes it boils down to individual communities, what strategies are appropriate, whether it's a mass media or, you know, a person-to-person strategy. Is that helpful in answering your question? I'm sorry, I was out of the room. I'm not sure what extent your conversation you may have had on this.
I think that gets to it. I guess I'll just ask one other piece, that the 20-some thousand households that will get to weatherize in the next 18 months or so, are there 20,000 households that are income eligible and are essentially on a, you know, a wait list, as it were, already, or is there more work to be done to ensure that folks are interested.
Mr. Chair and members, my best guess is that there are something on the order of 5,000 to 7,000 households that are already currently waitlisted, and then it becomes a question of how do you manage the communications and the community relations to reach the rest, particularly some of those targeted households, without creating unrealistic expectations.
And Mr. Anderson, the number of LIHEAP customers or LIHEAP clientele is in the neighborhood of about 145,000 in the state of those 400,000 households. Is that accurate?
Mr. Chair and members, if memory serves, I believe that with this year's current level of funding that we're serving something approximately in that range. If I could turn to the department, I think they may have that number off the top of their head.
I think if we can just get a nod of the head or a very, very quick confirmation, that would be helpful.
Mr. Chair, very quickly, we have served so far this plan year approximately 145,000. It is a record. We have served a record number this plan year. We have never served that level before. And we're still working toward our goal of 160,000, and we have left the program open until the beginning of July to help us achieve that. We may not get there, but we're already in record territory.
Right. Thank you. Thank you both for, I think, helping clarify this question. It does sound like there's some more room to do some outreach in terms of making sure that we let those 145,000 know that they are all income eligible for weatherization. And so I think we'll see what we can do to work out a compromise on this issue that's cost effective. Any last concerns? I think the next step will be moving to recess, but I want to make sure we have a chance to air anything. Senator Dill, we have something before us from you.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I'm just giving you a little additional information to pick up on our discussion of a day or so ago concerning the difficulty our citizens have finding housing and jobs after they've been released from prison. And the handout that I gave you is a 5.5-page document that does list the occupations that these people cannot work in. And it is a huge problem because you come out of jail or prison and you need a job, but you can't find a job, and you need a place to live, and you can't find a place to live, and there's tremendous economic pressure on you to return to a life of crime because you've got to get some money somehow to feed yourself. And I think we need to take a serious look at this because it's an issue that's been growing over the years and getting worse, as you can see from this long list of things you can't do. You can't even go to the racetrack and groom a horse if you're a convicted felon, and it's a serious issue. And I the bill that we have before us, at least in the House side, has got some language which continues to move us in that direction, making it difficult to earn a living if you had that kind of a background. And I understand this year there was a bill, I think this year, to inform college students up front if they wanted to major in some area that if they have a criminal background, they might as well forget it rather than invest in becoming a dental hygienist or any number of things. They should know that up front so they don't make the investment and finally get their degree and find out they can't work in their chosen field. Anyway, this list I got from Senator Linda Berglund, or not Berglund, but Senator Higgins, and I just thought it would be interesting for the committee to see it and just some additional information to consider as we wrap this conference committee up.
So, Senator Dill, I think on policy I agree with you. I advocated against the amendment as Representative Seifert offered on the House floor, and it was against my vote that the body put it on with an overwhelming vote. I think there's some issues in the House language that I personally would like to get rid of, and I can identify those for you very quickly. And I certainly think the subdivision four, I think this prohibition on us as a legislature telling the community action agencies don't hire is an unacceptable unacceptable piece. So if you look at R5, subdivision four, lines 316 to 318 in the House language, I think that the crimes against property, you know, as you said very well yesterday, that's unacceptable. I mean, I think that it doesn't further the goal of making sure that we protect those who are receiving services. I also think that the sentence on language 3.1 to 3.13 requiring the applicant to pay for it goes against every other, I don't know about every other, goes against most other, certainly I've yet to hear any situation where that's done in state law. And if it is, I think it's a bad idea, hearing Representative Hilty mutter. you know, I think there's a reality that 115 or 100, something like that, 107 House members voted for this provision. I think we've heard through conversation with community action agencies that they don't do what's prescribed in the House language that we have in front of us, but do perform a background check. We have yet to hear from a community action agency that doesn't. And so, you know, I hope that we can find some way to make sure we don't have level three sex offenders unwittingly being hired to do weatherization. I think that there's a right to know and leave that decision up to the hiring agency. And so I hope that we might be able to work out some language that doesn't represent the very draconian, harsh language that is in front of us, but will ensure that Minnesotans are kept safe as we help them with assistance, that they merely have knowledge of, that the hiring agency merely have knowledge of the time of interview, what's happening. Senator Anderson?
Well, I'm not sure if Senator Dill wanted to.
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I can respond, I the CAF agencies have told me they do these background checks anyway. And I think we just need to turn the corner on this thing, and since they're doing it anyway, I would like to just keep this language out of here. And although there may have been 107 House members that voted for it, I think they need to rethink this in a broader sense, because we need to we complain about recidivism, and it's a big problem, but it's a big problem because we turn these people out into an environment where they can't find a job. And this is a way to make a statement. It's a way for you to bring this thing back to the Minnesota House and explain it to those 107 members and try to modify their position on this important issue. So I'm interested in deleting all this language.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kaelin and the House members, I know you're in a difficult position because you have language that was adopted by a large number of your colleagues, and you're supposed to uphold it, even though a number of you, I think, voted against it. But, you know, I think we need to really be honest here. This amendment is not necessary to this bill. This amendment has nothing to do with stimulus dollars and putting people to work, as Senator Dill said. It only stands in the way of putting people to work. It's just one of those amendments that we get on in front of us every day that are really, really hard to vote against, even though we know we ought to. And I appreciate some of you were willing to say no anyway, because it's not an easy thing to say no to. But it's not needed. No one has asked for this. They already do it. It's just you don't want to be the one voting against something like this. We all know how it works. This will not harm the bill to take it out. So I have Senator Moi. We have Senator Dill has been extremely passionate about this, as we all heard yesterday. And Senator Moi, who chairs our Judiciary Committee, has indicated if this comes back in the bill, she's going to move to send it back to Conference Committee and send the bill to the Judiciary Committee, which has spent an enormous amount of time on this issue. And it's a policy matter that was never heard in either side in a committee. And I just need to be clear that I've surveyed my members, and there's not one Senate vote for this provision. I'm sorry. We just prefer it not be in the bill at all.
Well, Mr. Chair. Oh, well, Senator Dill.
Senator Dill and Senator Kubley.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to have Mr. Fuller make a comment about this issue.
Mr. Fuller.
Mr. Chairman, he understands better than I do.
Yes.
I do think there might be an equal protection question here because you've picked a class of people that's a part of a larger class, people who go into homes and do services, even weatherization services. So if this is not a requirement for private entities that are doing this service, there has to be some basis for why this class is being selected. And if there, if it implicates some suspect criteria, it has to satisfy a very high test. And I think, in fact, it might. And so otherwise, it has to have a rational basis. And I don't see a rational basis for distinguishing between these individuals who perform services in homes as opposed to the Roto-Rooter man who comes to your house.
Well, Mr. Fuller, I appreciate that. And I think that goes to the point that Senator Anderson raised and I spoke about on the House floor. And I certainly don't want to have a stimulus jobs bill where we require a severability clause. I think that that would I think that would probably make your point and then some, Senator Dill. So I hear you on that. Senator Kubley.
Well, I was just going to say, Mr. Chair, and thank you, that, you know, I wonder how many people that voted for it would vote for it if it were presented as a service that was being duplicated. And it seems to me that that is the case in many instances. I think you'd lose a fairly good percentage of those votes if you let it be known that that was something that was done in quite a few areas already.
Well, I think we're going to have to chew on this issue a little bit. I want to thank all 11 members, all 10 voting members and Representative Champion. That's why there's 11, if those of you who are listening on tape later. You know, I think we've all had a conversation about this either here at the table or privately, and it's an important conversation to have. Representative McNamara, would you like to add anything here?
Well, just thank you, Mr. Chair. And you presented, I thought, a very compromising position that you were willing to take away all the employment prohibitions out of our potential offer. The 107 House members that voted for this voted for the employment prohibition. I would say that was probably the bigger part. The list is pretty scary of the folks that we were trying to keep out of these homes with this prohibition. Senator Dale, I respect your opinion and like the idea of giving people a second chance, and that's why we just thought it would be good idea to just for people to be informed. We're not limiting anybody. You gave a long list of where people can't work. We're not limiting this to anybody to be able to work. And so I respect Senator Anderson saying that, you know, that this is going to not work and it's going to have to go back. Well, the reality, we don't even need to do this bill. It's already been testified yesterday that if we can't agree on what to do, this is going to go forward anyway. And then the existing law, I think we'd be better to try and work together. That was a huge compromise, Mr. Chair, that you offered. And that's going to be a hard sell when we go back to get bipartisan support, which this bill had, which is what we want.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson, and then I think we'll maybe try to take our first formal action here.
I'm pretty disappointed to hear you suggest perhaps we could just abandon the whole bill to save this provision. That doesn't seem, it seems out of proportion. And I think, I honestly believe that, I mean, I understand you'll have a tough time explaining this to your members if it doesn't proceed, but I think if the Senate won't support it, you don't really have, I mean, that's not on your, that's not, you've done everything you could to support it, and I think we're the ones that would have to take that responsibility. I cannot imagine you won't have, that was a lot of double negatives, but you're going to have a heck of a lot of people voting for a bill that's going to put hundreds of people to work around the state, save thousands and thousands of dollars in energy costs, create renewable energy projects around the state. I mean, this is in a time of budget cuts. This is going to be one of those bills that's going to get more green votes than just about anything we're going to see, I believe. And I don't think that having background checks is going to make or break that, with all due respect.
Well, I think what I'd looking for is a House member willing to move the House language on 3.7 to 3.10. And from 3.1 on R5, excuse me, and 3.13 to 3.15. Representative Hilty, would you be kind enough to move those two lines? It's the sentence that appears, that begins on line 3.7 to 3.10. And the sentence that appears on line 3.13 to 3.15.
Actually, Mr. Chair, I think it would be more appropriate for Representative McNamara to move those lines.
Mr. Chair, I'll move lines 3.7 down to line 3.10, including the word individual,
mm-hmm.
And then delete the rest of line 3.10, delete line 3.11, delete line 3.12, and delete the first part of 3.13 up to the period, and then include the rest of the three words in 3.13 would be the superintendent. Yes, and then, Mr. Chair, if I can defer, we had some discussion about after an interview, and I believe I'd like to incorporate that language too, because that would allow the background check for the person to be confirmed they were getting an interview.
Can I give you some help there, Representative McNamara?
Yeah, if you could, if we also could get it.
If we could suggest something along the lines at the beginning of the sentence that starts with the superintendent of on line 3.13, upon selection for an interview, but no sooner, comma. And this is the kind of what's known parochially, or actually, I think we may have.
I've got this. This is from the.
I think Representative McNamara. I think the thing to do for now is let's try to adopt the House language, as it is, with direction to staff to suggest language that will do only upon an interview. I think, unfortunately, as much as I'd like to see us come with a background check, I think we're hearing a message from the Senate, but I would like to move this language that we have. And if that motion does not succeed, perhaps, Representative McNamara, we can try to work out an alternative that may be acceptable, just in the spirit of continuing to try to work to find some agreement. Is that okay with you? Okay. So I believe Representative McNamara, you're moving lines 3.7 to 3.10, that sentence that ends in individual in the House language, and 3.13 that begins with the superintendent of to the end of the paragraph on 3.15?
Correct.
Okay. Any further discussion? Senator Coobley.
Well, once more, Mr. Chair, I guess I would point out this whole section is under the weatherization portion. We've heard from the CAP agencies that this is something they already do. It really is not needed.
Thank you. Senator Dill?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I really think this whole thing should not be put in this bill, because we need to change the broader public policy that we've been following for the last many decades. And you've got a lot of people that are darn good and stupid when they're teenagers, and they make mistakes. Their brains are not mature. Our brains don't mature until we're 25 years old or so, and we have got to get rid of this policy. So when somebody makes a stupid mistake, especially when they're young and they pay their dues and they get out of jail or prison, we've got to be able to change our policy so they can get a place to live, get a job, make some money, and not return to a life of crime. And this kind of stuff is scattered all over our statute books, and it's time to get rid of it. and give these people a fair shake. So I'd urge a no vote.
Right. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the McNamara motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
No.
The motion prevails. That section is not adopted.
No.
Motion does not prevail. Excuse me. It is not adopted. Pardon me. I included the second negative, but not the first. I think seeing no further discussion, what I'd like to do is recess for a brief break for House members to get together for a second, and hopefully we can return as soon as possible. It is 9:45, I believe. And so what I hope to do is to be able to return here within an hour, and hopefully sooner. But just want to make sure that we'll have a chance to talk, and then maybe we can make some more progress. So we are in recess for an hour at the latest.